Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Tata Steel Limited Q1 FY21 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I would now like to hand the conference over to Ms. Samita Shah. Thank you, and over to you, Ms. Samita Shah.
Good evening, good afternoon, and good morning to all of you joining us from the Far East, India, Europe, and the U.S. On behalf of Tata Steel, it is my pleasure to welcome you all to this call to discuss our results for the first quarter of FY21. I hope all of you and your families are safe, and our best wishes cover the performance of Tata Steel, Tata Steel BSL, and Tata Steel Long Products, and we will be happy to take your questions on any of them. Since last year, we have also opened the call to our retail shareholders, and we will take a few questions from them as well, so please feel free to type in your questions. I would like to draw your attention to the Safe Harbor clause on page two of our presentation, which will cover the entire discussion today. I will now hand it over to Mr. C.V. Narendran, CEO and Managing Director of Tata Steel, and Mr. Koushik Chatterjee, Executive Director and CFO, Tata Steel. Thank you, and over to you, Naren.
Thanks, Samita. Again, good afternoon, good morning, good evening, depending on where you are. Thank you very much for joining us. This has been an unprecedented quarter for all of us, as well as for the industry and for all the economies. The health and safety of our employees and the communities in which we operate remains our foremost priority. We've taken significant steps in building COVID-19-ready medical capacity with more than 1,000 beds in India and different locations that we are in and state-of-the-art facilities in many of these locations. We have also taken several precautions across our sites, including creating pods, as we call these, a small work team so that in case of any instance, we are able to isolate them very easily rather than spend a lot of time doing contact tracing. And this has enabled us to limit the impact of COVID on us. So despite more than 40,000 employees and contract workers coming into multiple sites across India on a daily basis, so far we've been lucky to have only about 300 cases. We continue to be extremely vigilant and to ensure that our people are safe and obviously our operations are also stable. From an operating perspective, during Q1, we recalibrated our operations across all the geographies in Europe and India and Southeast Asia, in line with the underlying regulatory and market conditions of these regions. India obviously imposed a very stringent lockdown, and the domestic market was completely closed in April and for a good part of May. As a result, the steel demand declined by about 55% quarter-on-quarter to about 11 million tons in the first quarter, Q1 FY21. In line with the lockdown, we reduced our upstream operations across Tata Steel standalone, TSBSL, and TSLP to around 50% of the capacities in April before ramping up gradually till June. As a result, our India deliveries in Q1 dropped to 2.93 million tons, which is obviously a significant drop from our normal levels, and the resultant unabsorbed fixed costs have been entirely expensed off during Q1, which has affected our margins. To counter the closure of the domestic markets in April and May, we increased our exports significantly to 1.46 million tons in Q1, and while this tactical shift has obviously impacted our realizations and our margins, it's ensured that the India business generated free cash flows, which was key and which was a big focus area for us, and it also helped limit the drop in our deliveries to 27% quarter-on-quarter as compared to the 55% drop in the domestic market. So with the phased opening of the economy, capacity utilization was ramped up to about 90% in June. We also increased our sales sharply. In fact, our June sales was around 115% of FY20 average monthly sales, while our June sales in domestic markets was about 74% of FY20 average monthly sales. The numbers for July are even stronger, and as domestic markets normalize, we are reducing our exports, and the increase in capacity utilization and higher domestic sales will lead to an improvement in our margins in the second quarter. In Europe, the lockdown was less severe, but the steel demand was weak, and additionally, the share of imports continued to be elevated. Of course, the EU has taken some actions during the quarter to have quotas on the different sources of steel, which is starting to help, but capacity utilization in Europe continues to be quite low, and so there is headroom for increasing production even if demand picks up a bit. So strong iron ore prices push spot spreads to an unsustainably low level of about 150 euros per ton, which has had a sharp impact on the performance of the European steel manufacturers, including Tata Steel Europe. We operated at close to 78% capacity utilization during the first quarter and also suffered from an adverse product mix. While the transformation plan is underway, the impact is not visible due to the extremely adverse market conditions. We expect the demand recovery to be slow. The forecast for 2020 is a drop of 15.8% to 133 million tons for the whole of Europe. This is as per the World Steel Association forecast. But we expect the spreads to improve going forward because at 150, it is not sustainable for the industry. We are engaged with the respective governments in the UK and Europe for their support in these conditions. And of course, both the Netherlands and UK have existing schemes which we are availing of. The economic situation is gradually normalizing, and the sharp recovery in China, along with the normalizing steel inventories and declining steel net exports from China, has led to a recovery in Asian steel prices. The Indian steel spot spreads have also started picking up in line with improvement in regional prices and the recovery in domestic markets. While the risk of further COVID outbreak remains, we are cautiously optimistic that the worst is behind us. As discussed in the call last time, we continue to remain extremely focused on cash flows and liquidity management through this crisis and will be for the rest of the year. I will now hand over to Kaushik to comment on that and share details of our financial performance during the quarter. Over to you, Kaushik.
Thank you, Naren, and good morning, good afternoon, good evening to all of you. I hope all of you are safe and well. Let me start by commenting on our financial performance. Our consolidated revenue was 24,289 crores, which was lower by about 28% on a Q-on-Q basis, largely due to lower deliveries and adverse product mix across geographies. Our consolidated adjusted EBITDA stood at about 1,038 crores. As our operations were running lower than the normal capacity utilization, there were some idle or unabsorbed costs which has been fully expensed with. If we remove the impact of the idle cost of around 2,000 to 2,400 crores, the adjusted EBITDA would have been at about 3,038 crores. As before, these numbers do not include our Southeast Asia operations as they continue to be classified as held for sale under the discontinued operations. Our India operations, which includes Tata Steel standalone, TSBSL, TSLP, generated revenues of 12,689 crores. And an EBITDA of about 1,455 crores. Tata Steel standalone revenues declined to about 9,339 crores due to lower deliveries and adverse product mix. Tata Steel standalone EBITDA stood at 1,291 crores with an EBITDA margin of 13.8%. This translates into an EBITDA per ton of rupees 6,100. If we remove the impact of idle cost on Tata Steel standalone of about 766 crores, the EBITDA would have been 2,057 crores and EBITDA per ton would be in the region of 9,700. Moving to Europe, our revenues fell to 1.2 billion pounds in the quarter one, primarily due to lower deliveries and inferior product mix. The EBITDA for the quarter was a loss of 67 million. Improvements from transformation program, careful cost management and wage support from European on the Netherlands and the UK governments helped limit the EBITDA loss. The focus across Tata Steel Group during this quarter was primarily on cash flows. The business environment during the quarter was very fluid, and we took several initiatives to effectively manage our risk and focus sharply on liquidity. We focused on the cash flow management to generate a free cash flow quarter and maintain the net debt at March 2020 level. And this was a very important priority to maintain the balance sheet as well as to generate the cash flows to ensure the business continuity and robustness as far as the operations are concerned. As such, despite the sharp drop in margins and in an extremely challenging quarter, we generated free cash flows of about 700 crores after capex and other obligations, with the India business generating free cash flows of about 1,791 crores. This was achieved through cross-functional coordination and cash war room initiatives, which included fixed cost reduction, working capital management through better inventories, focus on debtors and debtor collections, working with suppliers and other initiatives. while our gross debt increased by about 2,500 crores, including 504 crores mainly due to the forex translation, the net debt reduced by 88 crores due to free cash flow generation, and as I said, was broadly in line with the March end net debt number. We have also curtailed our capex to for the full year, and as last time around, we had given the guidance that it would be at or under 5,000 crores for FY21. While the capex for first quarter is about 1,852 crores, some of this actually reflects previously committed spend, and the reduction will be more visible in the coming quarters. We will revisit our capex plan in H2 or when the business conditions normalize, because as you know that our expansion project is on a slow track at this point of time. We also increased our liquidity buffer and extended our debt maturity profile by raising about 5,935 crores of long-term debt. As of June 30th, our liquidity stood at about 20,144 crores, including 14,178 crores of cash and cash equivalent. We will use this to deleverage as the business conditions start to normalize. As you heard from Naren, the India business looks to be increasing as far as the underlying conditions are concerned. I would like to highlight that our long-term debt repayment across Tata Steel Group are less than $250 million each in the financial year 21 and financial year 22, but we have sufficient liquidity in our facilities to prepay, and we will keep reviewing it as the underlying conditions change. With this, I would like to end and open the floor for questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handset while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. We take the first question from the line of Anuj Singla from Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you very much. Good afternoon, everyone. So my first question is for Mr. Narendran. Sir, can you talk about what kind of price increases we have seen over the last couple of months, and what is the outlook going forward on the restocking cycle? Have you already started seeing some amount of restocking being done by customers in the run-up to the season, festive season, the seasonally strong season, or is it still very subdued?
Yeah, thanks, Anuj. Yes, things have actually picked up much faster than we had thought, and I think it started with China pretty much getting into a V-shaped recovery, if I can call it that. So while things did look bad in April and May, I think China became less and less of a net exporter, and steel prices started going up, and hence all of us started exporting into Southeast Asia and China. So steel prices, if I compare with what it was end of April or early May in terms of hot rolled coil prices in the Southeast Asian or East Asian markets, it's gone up by almost $100, in the last 3 months. And that has also led to release of inventories in India, where the inventories had built up as people were ramping up production. And today, I think the demand supply in India is very well balanced, and the Indian market has also started picking up based on the rural economy. It started with the rural economy or anything to do with the rural economy, whether it was tractors or motorcycles or the retail sales that we do into the rural markets. So in April, May, June, initially the long product prices were stronger because a lot of construction activity started getting completed as the lockdowns opened up. That led to the long product prices being a bit strong in May and June. But then as monsoon started coming in, longs softened a bit. But again, it started going up because international scrap prices have gone up, DRI prices have gone up, iron ore prices have been very strong. So what we are seeing now is certainly the domestic markets restocking, certainly. We are also seeing improved auto sales having a cascading effect on multiple sectors, particularly the MSMEs. So not only is it restocking, but we are seeing that people who were postponing purchases thinking that prices will drop are now preponing purchases or purchasing what they need. And as a consequence, the hot rolled coil prices have gone up by at least 2,000-2,500 rupees since June. And we expect some more price increases in in the rest of the quarter. Long products was a bit slower off the off the bottom in some sense, but I must also say that the current price levels are still below what it was pre-COVID. You know, because the prices have dropped, it's gone back, but we are not yet at pre-COVID levels.
Okay, and so it's fair to assume that the inventory levels in the channel, including the steel producers and customers, now that they are at a very reasonable state. So if there is any uptick in demand, that could lead to a strong restocking cycle if that were to happen in the second half of the year.
I think what is happening now is, I mean, firstly, it's very unusual for steel prices to go up in the monsoon months. Okay.
Right.
So it reflects the demand-supply balance. Second thing is, I think the demand in the export markets are still quite strong. Okay. So today, the domestic producers have a choice between exporting at decent prices or selling in the domestic market. So at this point in time, there's no pressure on inventory anywhere because in India, at least all the primary producers are pretty much coming as close to full production capacities as possible and have the options of selling in the domestic market or exporting. Okay, so we don't have the pressure that we normally see in monsoon months, and which is a good thing the way we see it, because normally October onwards, things anyway start picking up. If you see last year's price increases started happening from November, right? It was actually going the other way between June and October last year. And it started going up in November until the pandemic tripped it in March. So so normally second half of the year, more specifically January to June, is the best 6 months for steel prices. And typically after the monsoons, there is a buildup which starts happening till January, and then, you know, normally it does well. So the good thing is after a long time, I'm seeing monsoon months when prices are going up, which is positive for the industry.
Understood. Very clear. So very good. Second question is on Europe. Is there a one-off related to carbon credit sales in this quarter? And if you can quantify that?
Yeah. So there has been a one-off sale in the last quarter. I think it's about 60 million, Kashi.
The total amount of sale is about 132 million pounds. And there is a gain which is about 78 million, of which 56 million is in the UK, and the rest of it is in Netherlands. So that's the impact. So the sale amount, which is the cash flow amount, is about 138.2, and the gain amount is about 78 in the case.
So Mr. Chatterjee, just to clarify, 132 million GBP.
Pounds, yes.
Yeah, so this is what has been incorporated in the EBITDA for this quarter.
No. Saying that 132 is for cash flow purposes. For the EBITDA purposes, you take 78 million pounds.
Okay, understood. And lastly, sir, on the outlook on Europe, given the, you already mentioned 150 euros per ton. These are close to, multi-year low kind of spreads. So it's anybody's call how long the spreads will take to improve. So meanwhile, is there a prospect of additional regulatory support in terms of, they have been useful on interest-free loans or some investment by the government in the company? Is there anything, any color you can share? What kind of hand-holding the government can provide us in this challenging period?
So one thing is from the market side, the EU is set in some quotas now. So there is a product-specific, country-specific quota, okay, so which is, kind of acting as a cap on imports. Imports is about 20%, which is, if you look at the long-term average, 20% of domestic demand being met through imports is quite high. But there have been a few players who've been quite aggressive and strong, particularly Turkey. So the product-specific, country-specific quotas will help limit the share that any single country or source can enjoy, and that we believe will bring more discipline into the market, and we are already seeing the impact of that in terms of the sentiments changing. And I think in Europe as well, the prices have started creeping up over the last few weeks, not as quickly as it has happened in Asia, That's also partly because Europe, still the capacities are underutilized, so there is headroom for people to increase production if they want. But still, sentiments have changed. Again, this is traditionally a weak season in Europe because it's holiday season, but still we are seeing prices going up, and we expect that after the holidays, when the factories, the consuming factories pick up steam, we will see some more positive sentiments, may not be to the extent that it's in Asia. From the government side, there are some announced schemes which we are availing of, both in Netherlands and in UK. Some of it is to do with wage support, which we have got for the last few months, and that is linked to economic activity staying where it is. If the productions go up to 100%, then you will not get some of those benefits. The second part is related to deferrals on payments to the governments, which again we have got. That helps cash, doesn't help EBITDA. So these are the two things that we've got. All other conversations are a little bit more strategic and long-term, which at this point in time, we don't have anything very specific to share.
Understood. Thank you. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Pinakin Parekh from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you very much. I have three quick questions. My first is, if we look at Tata Steel India realizations, moving from the first quarter to the second quarter, there will be a benefit of lower exports, higher prices on exports, and higher domestic prices. So broadly, what kind of realization increase can we see on a quarter-on-quarter basis for the India operation? My second question is that when we look at Europe, the EBITDA loss was even after some support from the governments over there. So going forward, as that support is withdrawn, should we expect a spike in the EBITDA losses in Europe? And my last question is that the company reduced debt in such a tough quarter. So would the company like to give a guidance for any kind of net debt reduction plans it has for FY21?
Yeah. So Pinakin, I'll address the first two and ask Kaushik to chip in for the third one. So on the first one, yes, for the multiple reasons that you said, we expect Q2 to be at least 3,000 rupees per ton better than Q1. And let's see how it goes. We are still only halfway into August, and let's see how it goes. So 3,000 is a minimum expectation, and let's see what better we can do on that. The second point on Europe, you know, this is despite it being one of the toughest quarters in Europe because you know that in Europe we are very auto dependent. Auto is a very big part of our, in India it's about 20%, in Europe it's about 35-40%. And auto has been very weak, as you know, during the pandemic, and that is starting to improve. So in Europe we had a very, very challenging quarter, and that's reflected in the EBITDAs. So I would say going forward, while yes, some of the support may go away, but that support is linked to the revenues coming back to where it was pre-COVID, you know, which would imply that the economic activities are better. And if the economic activities are better, then obviously the volumes will pick up, and we expect the spreads at 150 euros. I don't think anyone in Europe will be making money, you know, so it can't stay at that level. So if the spreads trend back to long-term averages, then we will see the improvement there. We do see that situation can't be as bad as Q1, you know, and also the European stimulus that the governments have announced is very significant. Once it starts flowing into the economy, that will also have a positive impact. So if you saw Q4, Q4 was, I would think, that's a little bit more reflection of what we would expect normally. When I say Q4 of last year, I can also say that operationally we are much more stable than we were last year. So as the markets pick up, we should be able to deliver operational numbers which are better than it was last year. So all said and done, I'm not saying Q2 will be significantly better than Q1 because things are still challenging in Europe. It's not improved as significantly as it is done in Asia. But going forward, we expect things to get better.
Understood.
Ed, you want to?
Yeah. Pinakin, so you know, this has been one of the toughest quarters to manage the balance sheet. And I think we've pulled all stops to ensure that we do not fill it up with debt. And I think the company all across have done tremendously well on that front. I think we will certainly focus on ensuring that the net debt number remains the same, is the base case focus. I'm looking at Q2 very carefully and to get a sense as to how the Q2 improvements happen. So maybe around October, November, October in particular, I think we would be in a better position to say how much we would be able to reduce net debt. If it was only the India business, I would be more confident to say that we will certainly have a net debt reduction. The volatility in Europe makes me to hold back till September to understand how the European recovery will happen, because the current level of spot is very, very significant. And also in the context of what you're seeing, our peers are performing at this time. So I think we will certainly focus as principal on net debt reduction. How much would be the range of that reduction? I would hold, it's too early in the year to comment on it. You know, as a principal, we've always said we, for many years now, last 2 years at least, that we want $1 billion of net debt reduction. But I can't say that at this point of time. I would like to hold on till October and then be in a better position, because the volatility in Europe is something which does not allow me to give away the answer at this point. Our intention has always been, and in the first quarter it has happened, that we have not actually sent any capital from India to Europe in the way we had done it in the past. The European management is also very focused in ensuring that they manage the cash within the pool of cash that they have. So there are a lot of actions being taken there also. Long story short, I think base case, keep the net debt at this point of time. In a better visibility, we will be coming back with a range as to how we will do. The long-term intention is very clear that we would like to get back to $1 billion reduction every year.
Understood. Thank you very much for this, sir.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, a reminder to the participants, please limit your question to two per participant. You may rejoin the question queue if you have a follow-up. The next question is from the line of Indrajit Agarwal from CLSA. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Thank you for the opportunity. A couple of questions from my side. So when you actually engage in the carbon credit sale, what is the thought process? Is it like we will not be using the carbon credits that we have for the rest of the year or foreseeable future, or is it more to manage the cash flows? And does this reflect the net debt as you have reported for the June quarter?
Kaushik?
So I think it's a mix of both. First is when you go down very sharply in the operating levels, then the opportunity emerges. Otherwise, those opportunity doesn't remain. If the company or the industry is going full out on volumes, then obviously there is no opportunity to do this. But when you look at sharp reductions like what we have seen all across the globe, where the capacity utilizations have been lower at about, depends on different areas, but in Europe at about 70% roughly, then we also do assess that whether this level will continue for the foreseeable future. Also within Europe, when we look at it, we see between UK and Netherlands. Netherlands typically goes full out, and therefore you not do much in Netherlands. UK has been lower in the capacity utilization, and the market's different. So so that's the philosophy within which we look at it. And then, of course, if you give target to the management team that you need to live within the means, this is one of the means from a short-term monetization perspective, and which has also been the issue. So once that happens, then it helps us to essentially monetize for the short term. So it's a mix of both, but it is essentially a short-term tactical move rather than a structural move.
So in the second half, if you were to reach the 10 million ton annualized run rate of production, could there be possibility that we really needed to buy carbon credits?
So at the end, if it goes beyond what our current plan is, 10.5 is the kind of capacity that we are using. there would be in the second half, towards the end of the second half, a requirement to buy back some part of the carbon credit. Yes.
Sure. My second question is on the financials of consolidated numbers. There's a big other comprehensive loss, items that will not be classified into profit or loss. Is there a cash flow impact of that, or is it just a book entry?
So let me explain that. Maybe I should have put it in my main explanation. So this relates essentially to the British Steel Pension Scheme 2, which is a new scheme. I think we have said it in the past that this scheme is a ring fence scheme within Tata Steel UK and does not have with Tata Steel UK only as the sponsor and doesn't have any impact on the rest of the group. This scheme was in March end was in surplus of about 2.7 billion pounds, and in the last quarter the scheme assets have increased by 0.6 billion on quarter-on-quarter basis to 11.2 billion. That's the full value of the scheme. But the liabilities have also increased by about 1.3 billion to about 9 billion. And these changes were largely driven by the discount rate changes with a decrease in the corporate bond yields and increase in the CPI assumptions, and partly offset by the gains on the assets and the increase in the value of the bonds held by the scheme. So the reduction is about 731 million pounds. That goes through to the OCI, and the deferred tax impact of that actually goes to the P&L. So that's why you would find in the console, the number is almost about 1,300 crores. On the tax, which is essentially the deferred tax element on the BSPS scheme too. So that's the explanation of these two.
It's non-cash, Kaushik.
Yeah, both of it is non-cash. There's no impact on cash. So the OCI, what you see, represents about 5,500 crores of remeasurement loss on actual valuation of the employee benefits. And all of these are actually non-cash impact.
Sure. That is helpful. And one last, if I may squeeze, there is a difference of 500 crore between reported and adjusted EBITDA consolidated. So is there, what is the cash flow impact of this?
Reported and, maybe I'll come back to you. I'll just give you that explanation. Reported and the adjusted in the press release that you're saying.
No. So in the presentation, I'll just refer to the slide number. So the slide number is 9. So EBITDA reported is 597 crore. Adjusted EBITDA is 1,038 crore.
So that is the FX element is also part of that, which is almost about 400 crores.
Sure. So no expense.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks a lot. And all the best.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Subrat Devedi from SBI Life Insurance. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir, and thanks for taking my question. First, just wanted to understand about the debt outside India. So what is the total debt now and whether it is bank loans or bonds, and how, because bonds would for us be slightly difficult to refinance. And you mentioned there is no support which was given during the quarter from India to Europe, but going ahead, if you see that happening.
So the India debt, if I really look at the total number of debt, it is about half and half between India and the rest of the outside. Large part of it is bank debt. For example, the European debt of about 17,000 crores roughly is actually bank debt. There is two bond debts, bonds, I think about 10,000 crores in Singapore. So a large part of the debt is still in our system, is still a bank. About 25-30% would be in bonds. Some of the bonds are in India. For example, there are LIC bonds and NCDs, et cetera, which are mostly in India. And the overseas debt is predominantly bank debt, but there is also some bonds in Singapore. So that's how I would classify it.
And the support from India, if it is required going ahead to Europe?
So our fundamental position is that we work with our European colleagues to ensure that there is no requirement of support, and that's how the whole system is geared towards. So there is a, but I think as I mentioned earlier, the volatility of the European business is very high at this point of time. It's always been higher than India. And I think what we are looking for is to come to a structural solution at some point in time, which will ensure that this support is no longer required. But at this point of time, we are going quarter by quarter. So last quarter was not required. Hopefully this quarter also will not be required. So because that's an important part in ensuring that the net debt reduction is achieved at the end of the year.
Okay, sir. My second question is on net debt only. So ratings were put on negative outlook sometime in April, and they have certain covenants, expectations in terms of net debt to EBITDA thresholds. It was reaching those levels in March, and perhaps in March 21 also it will breach. So is there any thought on equity infusion, or what is the strategy on net debt going ahead?
So net debt reduction will happen. I can't see equity injection at this point of time because that there will always be a limited number that equity can bring it. It can only meet for the short terms in some terms recalibrating these numbers. But fundamentally, the better business, better cash flows, lower capex, and at some point some portfolio actions is what would bring the net debt down. So I think that on all of this, there's a lot of work going on in the company, and we're not in a position to talk a lot beyond what you see in the cash flow numbers on the operating side. Some of it will, that's our focus to bring down the net debt numbers.
Okay, okay. And so just one last small bit from my side.
Just to add to that, is that our CapEx has been one of the biggest levers from a discretionary capital allocation point of view. So our focus has been on safety, essential CapEx, and maintenance CapEx. Growth CapEx has obviously come down. And in terms of sequence of cash flows or cash allocation, the balance sheet comes ahead of the capital allocation for growth at this point of time. And that's a stated position that we have adopted in the company, at least for the immediate term. And we will continue to do so till we reset and get to the balance sheet levels.
Okay, sir. Thanks a lot. I'll come back in the queue.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, I'd like to remind participants again, please limit your question to two per participant only. Next question is from the line of Gaurav Rateria from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hey, sir, thank you for taking my question. So firstly, if you can elaborate a little bit on how demand looks in various segments in auto, retail, ECA, industrial products from a month-on-month perspective for July and August, and has that changed your inventory position?
Yeah. So I think let me start with auto. We are certainly seeing auto things improving by the week. Even sometime in June, the forecasts were not so great. But I think in July, we're seeing that almost every week they are revising their forecast. The auto customers are revising their forecast. So I think passenger vehicles, like I said earlier, it was mainly tractors, which was very strong, and it was pretty much at pre-COVID levels. Motorcycles was the next one which started picking up, which was, again, linked to the rural economy. We are now seeing passenger vehicles go up, as you saw from the Maruti's numbers and everyone else's. It's still maybe at 50-60% of what it used to be 2 years back, but things are certainly improving because they were at 10-20% of what they were 2 years back. Good news is medium vehicles, medium-sized commercial vehicles, again, starting to pick up a bit. The light commercial vehicles are picking up a bit. The medium and heavy still a bit slower. They will be the last of the block. So we are seeing different segments grow differently. And at least over the last few weeks, every week has been a more positive upgrade from our auto customers, so which is good. But it's been at the end of two bad years, so there's a lot of catch-up to do to go back to where we are. Surprisingly, if you've been following China numbers, China is already at 2 million vehicles a month, which is where they were, you know, 2 years back or one and a half years back. In terms of retail, retail has been strong because retail for us is more rural and small town-led. And whether it's roofing sheets, whether it is construction steel or anything else that we sell in retail has been quite strong, and which is good. The ECA business, which is largely linked to MSMEs, we deal with about 8,000 to 9,000 MSMEs. You know, maybe 2 months back, we saw about 4,000 of them active. Now we are seeing about 7,000 to 8,000 quite active. So more and more are coming back. Again, they are also linked to auto. They are also linked to many other areas. In terms of end-use segments, I think wherever there is government spending, like oil and gas, we're seeing things pick up. We are also seeing panels, you know, or any hospital-related infrastructure. So there are many sub-segments which we are seeing. Again, with Atmanirbhar Bharat, the solar panels, for instance, a lot of components used to get imported. We are seeing that now getting indigenized. Wind energy was always indigenized quite a bit. So there are different parts of the economy which we are seeing picking up. The only disruptive point is the local lockdowns, which are sometimes announced, which is disruptive for manufacturing units in those areas. But beyond that, I think we are slowly seeing week on week, month on month things improving.
Thank you for the elaborate answer, sir. Sir, I just wanted to check on the inventory position also, how that has changed versus the June end. And second question is with respect to Europe. I understand what you said that things may not improve significantly, but do you have visibility for 2Q to be at least similar to 1Q as far as profitability is concerned and not worsen from here? That's it from my side. Thank you.
Yeah, so I think inventories are coming down month on month. It came down significantly in June. A lot of the cash release has also been because we managed inventories quite well last quarter, and it continues to come down significantly. July also the inventories have come down. So we are seeing month on month inventories go back to where it should be. So the inventory that we had built up in the first week of the last week of March because of the shutdown, the lockdown in India, is now pretty much helping us meet with the increased demand. In terms of Europe, I would say that we expect Q2 to be similar to Q1.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sumangal Naveda from Kotak Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good afternoon and thanks for the chance. First question is on the net debt. Encouraging to see that in this quarter also net debt is not increased. Is it possible to break the free cash flow number which you had given at the opening remarks into what was the operating earnings, working capital reduction, and the capex?
Kaushik?
Just give me a second. Can you repeat your question? You wanted.
Yeah. The breakup of free cash flow in terms of operating earnings, capex, what we've done, and the working capital reduction, what we've seen in 1Q.
So are you looking at it from a consolidated perspective or is it from...
So consolidated should be fine. And then if we can just give the final FCF number for Europe, that will be very helpful.
So let me give you console numbers. So
yeah.
If I look at the EBITDA for the consolidated EBITDA was about 597. So our free cash flow before capex and dividend was about 2,453. We had a capex of about 1,705, which leads us to net free cash flow of about 700 crores.
Understood. And this means that we have a significant working capital release. So yes, is it something, a sustainable thing or something when sales will pick up, we will see a reversal here?
So the working capital release was about 2,585 crores. and of which the bulk of it was in India. When I say India, it is between Tata Steel India, Bhushan Steel and Long Products. That itself was about almost 2,200 crores. And Europe did have cash flows emanating out of the sale of carbon. So that has also gone in there. And so all taken together, it's been a 2,500 crores of release. And to your question of whether it is sustainable, I think in India it is sustainable. We are seeing pickup in the volumes, as Naren elaborated on this. But we are focusing our working capital both on inventory, debtors, and also in stuff like spares and loose tools, etc. So I think as far as India is concerned, we don't see a reversal of where we were into the second quarter. So it is very clear from an India perspective that the working capital release, in fact, we are pushing for more working capital release in the second quarter. So I think that's achievable.
Understood. And in terms of Europe, is it possible to share what would be the free cash flow burn which we would have seen in 1Q?
In the last quarter?
Yeah.
So last quarter, the free cash flow burn would be roughly around in the zone of 700 crores.
Understood. Secondly, in terms of costs in coming quarters, in terms of coking coal and others, what are the tailwinds which one should expect?
So in terms of coal, basically we got about a $10 benefit in Q1 over Q4. In Q2 over Q1, we expect about $5. This is just on the coking coal. But costs, particularly in India, will also come down because the volumes are picking up. So there'll be better utilization of facilities. So that is positive for cost. What is negative in some sense is the mix is getting more richer. So that's, of course, will get offset in the prices. But I'm saying if you're producing more downstream and finished products, then obviously from a cost per ton point of view, you will see an increase because of that. But net, the costs in Q2 will be lower than Q1.
Understood. And just a follow-up on the first one, the CapEx is 1,700 crores. So can we expect this run rate as a bare minimum maintenance CapEx which we require for the business?
No, I think practically, yeah, go ahead, Kaushik.
So in the first quarter, actually, there was a lot of CapEx which happened, a lot of payments which happened on CapEx, which is already done in the previous quarter. Also, as far as Kalinganagar was concerned, there were some payments which had to be done on committed CapEx, which, the equipment had come into the site, etc. So we have to ensure that we agree on a certain amount of payments, and then we have renegotiated with various suppliers on the new schedule of when we would want the work to be done, etc. So there's a lot of activity that has happened because it was a running project. It was a project with full steam, and then to break it or rather bring it to a pause involved a lot of effort. Without impacting whenever we want to start it back. So I think there will be some CapEx payments still happening of that kind of a nature in the second quarter, though a lower number. And I think we would be keeping our guidance that it would be less than 5,000 crores as a group. So around 5,000 to less than 5,000 crores. So I said that in the first quarter call that it would be around 50%. I think we will be around that level itself. So that's our plan for this year. So there will be some, you should go ahead with the overall level, which was last year about 8-ish, and then we're talking about 4,000 to 4,500 crores. But I can also assure you that we are limiting the capex outflow as much as we can in all geographies and ensuring we stick to the into the safety environment and the compliance capex. That is very important to keep. But anything which is discretionary and good to have, we are reprioritizing it.
Understood. Thanks and all the very best.
Thank you.
Yeah, we will take a couple of questions from the webcast. A lot of questions have already been answered, but I think the common ones which have yet to be answered. Firstly, from the Southeast Asia asset sale, what is the update on that? And the second question is, what is the net debt to EBITDA target for the year?
Kaushik?
So Southeast Asia is ongoing. This is not exactly the season where the M&A activities can be expedited well, as you can well imagine. But we are ongoing conversations and a lot of documentation negotiations are going on. So we will come and talk about it more in details post September. The net debt target I've already mentioned in the past. In one of the questions, that our base case is certainly to hold it, and based on how the how we see the next few months, maybe in October I'll be in a better position to give the guidance on how much could be the range of reduction. And the path is clear. We would like to reduce about $1 billion, but this year is a very exceptional, unprecedented year, so we have to take it as we move forward.
I think, Kaushik, the question was net debt to EBITDA. And I think basically what we had said in the beginning of the last financial year was that obviously our goal is to bring it to below 3. At that time, we were at 3.2 or 3.3. But obviously the pandemic and the slowdown in India has, derailed our plans a bit. But obviously the long-term goal is to bring it below 3. I know it just now it looks tough, but like Kaushik has said, we are prioritizing the balance sheet over growth.
Yeah.
Shavita, what else?
Do we have any more questions? Maybe a last question?
Sure. We take the next question from the line of Rajesh Lachani from HSBC. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. I just want to, if you can throw some light on Europe sequential movement in EBITDA per ton. So last quarter we had a $4 profit in Europe, and this is now negative 43. So just want to understand what can you, if you can provide some breakup of how much was it due to lower realizations, how much was due to cost, and how did the carbon credit support it?
Yeah, so I think there are two things which, if you compare with the previous quarter, one is the volumes are slightly lower, and that has had an impact. And prices have also been lower for us because of the fact that the auto markets were quite slow. The auto factories were the first ones to close in Europe in March, and that had an impact, on our product mix for Q1. So these are the two factors which played an important role in the Q2 numbers being lowered. Cost takeouts were there, but obviously when you have a lower volume, there's a fixed cost overhang. So while last year we have actually taken down fixed cost by about 7-8% compared to the previous year, in a lower volume environment, you don't see that fixed cost takeout visible. So Q1 compared to Q4, volume impact and price impact played a significant role. There have been cost takeout at an operational level, which is offset by the fact that you had lower volumes. The carbon credit, as Kaushik said, from an EBITDA point of view, was about 78 million pounds, isn't it, Kaushik?
Yes.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to add to Naren what you said. Yeah. The volume losses accounted for about 71 million pounds. And that was a very significant bit. And there was obviously a production which was lower because mainly driven by the lower market demand. So that also had an impact on the cost. But the spend was overall 21 million improvement, which is the cost takeouts that happened. In fact, during this quarter, on a YTD basis, the transformation plan delivered about 100 million. So the spread impact was the most severe, and the volume loss and the spread impact was the most severe as far as the operations in Europe is concerned.
Understood. So, in case the carbon credits in next quarter are not available, do we see a further decline in Europe EBITDA per ton?
So that's what. So as Narin mentioned, that the Q2 will be similar to Q1 without the carbon credit. So in effect, we are saying that there will be an improvement in the underlying situation. So there is, based on the fact that there is more cost takeouts that are happening, and a lot of commercial actions are also being put in place. So the outcome guidance is that Q2 should be similar to Q1. Carbon credit is not included in that.
Thanks a lot. That's it from my end.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, this is a reminder to all participants. Please limit your question to 2 per participant. You may rejoin the question queue if you have a follow-up, as we have many people waiting for their turn. The next question is from the line of Ritesha from Investec Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, sir. Thanks for the opportunity. Sir, my first question is, what is the status on Bhushan merger and what it would mean on tax synergies? That's the first question.
So the Bhushan merger is process is undergoing. I think the next hearing is in towards the end of August. If everything goes well, we will have the EGM based on the dates when the NCLT gives, and following that we will go forward towards the completion. So I think we are certainly likely to progress to closure during this financial year. That's what our target is. Tax synergies is not something that I can comment on at this point, because I think it will all depend on it's not the reason for the merger. It's the other synergies which are important, and I think those synergies are significantly important because they sustain for a longer period of time, including procurement synergies, raw material synergies, operating supply chain, and various others. If there are some tax synergies, which is there because they are losses, but that will be more consequential than anything else.
That's useful. My second question is on Europe. How should one read conversion of 3.6 billion intergroup debt to equity and 1.9 billion intergroup debt being waived off, that is from a cash flow perspective? And secondly, the auditors have been flagging off concern on 20,000 crores of investment into TSGH. So what is the thought process behind this? And you did indicate earlier that there won't be money which will be flowing from India to Europe. But should one put the same into the context that ex-Europe, that is India and the Singapore entities, there won't be money flowing in ex-Europe into Europe? Should one look at that statement in that perspective? Thank you.
Yeah, so the intergroup money is the money of the last 12 years of support and also working capital lines provided, etc. So that should be seen from that perspective. And so long we are not going to increase, so therefore if we don't increase further support, then that number will be there. And when that surplus happens out of Europe in due course in the future, we would expect that to be reduced. That's the traditional way of looking at it. But at this point of time, I would say that the intergroup is lying there as something which we have lent in the past. And some of it we have converted to equity because it doesn't, from a system point of view, it doesn't make sense to accrue interest out of it, so we've kept it more as a converted into long-term capital, which is equity. You talked about the auditors bit. They have that's the investment from Tata Steel into Tata Steel Global Holdings, and that represents the equity bit for the entire international portfolio. So I think the point which the auditors wanted to highlight is that this portfolio has problems, then this investment has a problem. So, which I think is stating the obvious. So, I think that's how I would suggest you look at it.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Ashish Jain from Macquarie. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Thanks for taking my question. Sir, is it possible to quantify the government support amount which is there in the European EBITDA this quarter, and how could that number change, in 2Q and going ahead as well?
I think the support is roughly about 50 million pounds in Q1, and some of it will stay in Q2. But like I said, as the economic activity picks up and the revenues come back to normal levels, then you will see this going down. So hopefully any support that goes down will be made up by the improvement in performance. Then from a cash point of view, I think we've had about 80 to 100 million euros of deferrals. So this is roughly the numbers. Kaushik, is that correct?
Yeah, so I think there's been a deferral of about, from a cash flow point of view, about 54 billion pounds in the UK and about 90 billion pounds in Netherlands.
And so when we say deferral, is it again linked to any particular level of economic recovery, or is a deferral for a quarter or two or much longer?
Yeah, it's for a couple of quarters. So it will come back towards the end, but the way it looks like, some of it is also being extended.
Understood. Okay, so that's all my phone mindset. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The next question is from the line of Prashant Kumar from CGS CIMB. Please go ahead.
Sir, my question is on the other operating income in Q1 FY21 standalone is lower by roughly 320 crores. This is due to the MEIS benefit going away, sir? And what is your take on the RODTEP, and if you could give some color or light on what is the dialogue you're having with the government? And,
Yeah. So I'll comment on the general MEIS and RODP, whatever, ROEDP. And Kaushik can comment on the impact on the financials. So basically, I think our conversations with the government as an industry, I mean, not just steel industry, as industry, is that obviously over the last 3-4 years, the payout from the government has been from anything from 35,000 crores to 50,000 crores, depending on the year, on the MEIS scheme. And the MEIS scheme had been extended till December, and many exporters had actually quoted for orders and booked orders, assuming that this MEIS scheme is valid till December. I think what has come out is that the government has notified, or government has basically guided, that there will only be about 9,000 crores available. And so the question is, what happens to all the orders that have been booked and things like that. So this is the overall industry issue with the government. So the conversations are, can they be different way out? Can we, can the government, obviously we respect the fact that the government is short on revenues. So if the original plan to keep the scheme going till December, if it is supported, but the payments to be made later, then that can help. Otherwise, exporters have a challenge. From a Tata Steel point of view, India point of view, the impact is for the full year, maybe about 200-300 crores. So it is not as material as it may be for some of the smaller exporters, for whom this is a very important part of their bottom line. So we are in conversation with the government and trying to find a solution as an industry. And obviously, Tata Steel will benefit accordingly. So, but going forward, we are also expecting exports to come down. In Q1, we did about 50% of what we sold was in the export markets. In Q2, we expect that to be about 25% and keep going down if the domestic market picks up. So the impact of that on Tata Steel will continue to reduce.
Sure. Okay.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Abhijit Mitra from ICICI Securities. Please go ahead.
Yes, thanks for taking my question. So I have two questions. Firstly, on the standalone product mix. So from a quarterly volume run rate in autos of around 0.5 million ton is down to 0.08 million ton. By what time do you feel you can go back to your old run rate? And what kind of mix change has it led to in this quarter? I mean, this 0.5 million ton coming down to almost zero and had to be sort of diverted to exports.
Yeah. So, your question is pretty much when will auto industry go back to what it was 2 years back, right? We were doing about 2 million tons a year into auto 2 years back, and that has shrunk. So, to me, just now, it looks like auto industry is moving from 10% of 2 years back to maybe 30 to 40% of 2 years back. Okay, so that's where it is. And if Tata Steel protects its market share, you will see those volumes go up accordingly, right? What you said is right. A lot of what we lost in auto ended up in what we call IPPE or in exports. Okay, IPPE is more the general grades and exports. In IPPE, we have value-added grades, but the volumes in IPPE, which is industrial products and projects, is largely that. So, but the product mix continues to change as we divert from exports to domestic, because whatever we... the product that we sell in domestic, typically the price is better than the export price. Secondly, even within domestic, we are seeing retail sales are strong, which is normally a higher price product for us. We are also seeing the oil and gas sector pick up, which has been a segment which we opened up post Kalinganagar. So that will also help us. In auto, what is most steel intensive is commercial vehicles, particularly the medium and heavy vehicles. And that has been the most hit in the last 2 years for multiple reasons, even before the pandemic, because of the overweight, overloading issues, because of the NBFC and credit availability issues, et cetera, et cetera. But we expect that sector to come back as construction activity picks up. If the government is able to spend on infrastructure what it plans to do, and construction activity picks up in the second half of the year particularly, then the medium and heavy commercial vehicles can come back, and hence auto can go back more quickly to where it was 2 years back. So this quarter, we expect the numbers to be, to auto to be at least 2 to 3 times what we sold in the last quarter, but that is still a fraction of what we normally sell in any quarter.
Right, that's helpful. And secondly, on the standalone operations, what kind of cost initiatives can you take? Because there are certain line items which we see. For example, in Bhushan, the employee cost has gone up by 60 crores on a YOY or on a QOQ basis. So are there any sort of cost takeouts that you can see, you can implement and sort of, do better if you can throw some light? Yeah.
Yeah. So one is there are a lot of ongoing initiatives in all sites, whether it is Tata Steel, the main plants in Jamshedpur or Kalinganagar, the Bhushan plant in Angul, or the long products plant in Gamaria, etc. In fact, if you look at Bhushan, and which is TSBSL and TSLP, and if you really look at the cost quarter on quarter, in the last financial year from Q1 to Q4, you would actually see the cost drop by anything from 5 to 8,000 rupees a ton. Okay, so there's been huge cost takeouts there. In Jamshedpur and Kalinganagar, there's also a lot of focus on fixed cost takeouts. And this year alone, we've targeted at least 1,500 crores of fixed cost takeouts, of which we have some line of sight for about 1,000 crores, and we're working on the rest. So cost takeout initiatives constantly go on. It is reflected in some of the metrics that you will see over the years, most important being the coke rates, which have gone down, the PCI rates have gone up, so on and so forth. So there are a large number of those initiatives. The specific comment you made on employee cost in Bhushan was linked to some one-off payments for the we are also trying to bring some of the regular practices in terms of at the end of the year we normally pay some incentives, etc. I think some of these things were not done in a structured way in the past, so we brought some structure to it. So it was more a one-off, some payments that we made based on the last year's performance that was accounted for in Q1. That's why you're seeing that quarter on quarter increase.
Okay. Thanks. That's all from my side.
Yeah.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Bhavin Chheda from Enam Holding. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good afternoon, sir. So can you guide us on the current capacity utilization now in August around plants in India and Europe? In India, I mean Jamshedpur, Kalinga, Bhushan, and Usha Martin, has it reached 90% and above?
Yeah. In India, pretty much all sites. Actually, the long products TSLP plant reached 100% in June itself. All the other sites were 90% plus. Now we are 95%-98%. In September, there are some plant shutdowns for a few days here and there. So, but at the overall level, this quarter will be in excess of 95% in all the main sites and pretty much at 100% in August. I mean, 98%-99%. In Europe, it is at around 75%-80%.
In Europe, 75%-80%, you mean Imodium would be at 95%-100%, right?
No, no. Both are around 75%.
Both are around 75%. In terms of the iron ore integration for Bhushan, Tata Metals, Tata Sponge, how much percentage it would be at right now?
One of the things that we did during the pandemic was we kept our iron ore mines running full out. So as a consequence, we built some iron ore stocks. And hence, I mean, the original plan, if all the plants were running full out, was we would have had to buy some iron ore for the Bhushan plant. But since we stocked up on the iron ore, we are unlikely to have to buy iron ore, maybe some small quantities here and there. But pretty much.
Close to 100% now for all group companies, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. Metallics, I'm not remembering. Maybe Koushik can comment. But at least TSLP and the rest is pretty much 100%. We, of course, buy some pellets off and on depending on the pellet availability. Yeah. Koushik on metallics? Yeah.
Even for metallics.
Yeah.
And my last question, there was a press article regarding U.K. government investing close to £1 billion for 50% or so stake in Port Talbot operation, which can be carved out separately. So any timelines or any further talks on same? Because I think, as you mentioned in call, Europe is still in very bad shape. And though there is a steel buoyancy all across Asia, U.S., and Asia, India, and even U.S. recovering, Europe still doesn't look to be generating free cash flow positive or even a positive EBITDA. And demand is also expected in volume terms to remain down 15%-16%. So it is not going anywhere for next two, three quarters or so. So is there any timelines for cash support or that deal happening soon?
So one is there are multiple conversations going on with the government for short-term support and long-term support. So I think one is we're plugging into existing schemes, and which is what we articulated in terms of the wage support that we got, tax deferrals that we got. And there are some other supports that we are seeking, both in Netherlands and in U.K., which is available to a lot of the industry there. The long-term support conversations are a little bit more with the U.K., but too early for us to comment very specifically on it. So obviously, the conversation with the government is going on, and multiple proposals are being discussed. So I'll leave it at that. In terms of recovery, actually, Asia has recovered. I wouldn't say U.S. has recovered yet. So U.S. and Europe, we're waiting to see how things pan out. For a change, the prices in U.S. are actually lower than in Europe. Normally, it's the other way around.
Right. Okay. Thanks a lot, sir. Yeah.
Thank you. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question for today. I would now like to hand the conference over to Ms. Samita Shah for her closing comments.
Thank you very much, everybody, for dialing in, and we hope you found this call informative. Till we meet for the next quarterly call, thank you. Bye and stay safe.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you much. Bye.
On behalf of Tata Steel Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you all for joining. You may now disconnect your lines.